The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. 11 shocking events in sports history that are all but forgotten today. These stories are more fascinating than anything Hollywood could ever come up with, let me tell you. The Pirates' Doc Ellis was tripping on acid when he threw a no-hitter against the Padres on June 12, 1970. The right-hander mistakenly believed he was scheduled to pitch until the next day, so he dropped acid with a friend around noon. 2 hours later, he realized he was supposed to pitch that night. Ellis somehow kept it together enough to make it onto the mound where, despite not being able to feel the ball or see his catcher, he dominated. "I started having a crazy idea in the fourth inning that Richard Nixon was the home plate umpire," he later said. "And once I thought I was pitching a baseball to Jimi Hendrix, who to me was holding a guitar and swinging it over the plate." The idiosyncratic pitcher also won a curlers to a game against the Cubs, and there's a picture of him here. He's an African-American gentleman, and he's got all his hair in curlers. A documentary about the LSD-fueled no-hitter was released in 2014 entitled No, No, A Documentary. It's available to stream on Amazon Prime. Number 2. Monica Seles was the number one ranked women's tennis player in the world when during a match at the 1993 Hamburg Open, I remember this, an obsessed fan of a rival tennis star, Steffi Graf, leaned onto the court and stabbed Seles in the back with a boning knife. The knife plunged an inch and a half deep between Seles' shoulder blades. Thankfully, Seles had leaned forward to drink water a second before the attack, saving herself from a much more severe injuries. She was raced to the hospital and released a few days later. The attacker, Gunther Pache, hoped that by injuring Seles, he could enable Steffi Graf to once again become the top-ranked women's player in the world. Graf had been the top-ranked player for 168 weeks in a row before Seles took the top spot from her. Pache was determined to be psychologically abnormal at his trial and, instead of jail time, was only sentenced to 2 years probation and psychological treatment. Seles and Graf weren't friends, but Graf visited Seles in the hospital as a show of solidarity. Sadly, Seles experienced depression and anxiety after the attack and wouldn't return to the tour for 2 years. She also refused to play in Germany, moving forward, saying, "What people seem to be forgetting is this man stabbed me intentionally. He did not serve any sort of punishment for it. I would not feel comfortable going back. I don't foresee that happening." While Seles has had success after returning to the court, including winning the French Open in 98, she was unable to regain her prior greatness. Many believe that if not for the stabbing, she would be in the conversation of greatest woman tennis player of all time, along with Serena Williams. Number 3. Eddie Gaedel, a little person who stood just 3'7" tall, became the shortest player in Major League history on August 19, 1951, when he stepped to the plate for the St. Louis Browns against the Detroit Tigers. The Browns were a bad team. They went 52-102 in 1951, with an owner, Bill Veeck, who pulled a lot of stunts to get fans into the stadium. Gaedel's appearance was one of them. And there's a picture of him. It looks like about a 5-year-old kid standing in front of a catcher and the umpire. Veeck signed Gaedel to a major league contract and issued him a uniform with the number 1/8 on the back. Gaedel pinch hit for the game's leadoff hitter, and with orders to crouch down and not swing the bat, walked on 4 pitches. Gaedel was immediately removed for a pinch runner and received a standing ovation from the crowd. What he didn't receive was a lot of money. He was paid just $100 for his one-day appearance in professional baseball. Tragically, Gaedel was only 36 years old when he was beaten to death by men who followed him home from his job at a bowling alley. The only representative from Major League Baseball to show up at his funeral was Bob Kane, the Tigers pitcher who pitched to him. Number 4. Manon Rheum became the first woman to play in a National Hockey League game in 1992 when she played goaltender for the Tampa Bay Lightning in a preseason game against the St. Louis Blues. She played 1 quarter, allowing 2 goals and blocking 7 shots. While she never made a regular season NHL roster, she appeared in another preseason game for the Lightning the following year and played in the minor leagues from 1992 and 1997, becoming the first woman to appear in a professional regular season game. Manon also played on the Canadian Women's National Ice Hockey team there. No surprise, she was a standout player, helping her team win the silver medal at the 1998 Winter Olympics. Today she works as NHL's Los Angeles Kings in their player development department. Very attractive young woman. Nearly five decades earlier, nearly five decades earlier, Toni Stone not only became the first woman to play in the Negro Leagues, but the first woman to be a regular on a big league professional baseball team. She signed to play second base for the 1953 Indianapolis Clowns. Hank Aaron was a member of this team the previous year and played in 50 games, hitting a respectable .243. She played with the Kansas City Monarchs the following year before retiring to become a nurse. And there's a picture of her. She's quite an attractive young lady, jumping up and catching the ball. A remarkable talent, Stone didn't have it easy during her time in the Negro Leagues. She was spun by many of her male teammates and reportedly told by her manager to go home and cook for her husband. She also was asked by team manager to wear a skirt for sex appeal. She refused. And sported scars on her wrist thanks to the many male base runner who, not enthusiastic with having her in their league, went to second base hard with their cleats up. In recent years, Stone has been included in exhibits at Major League Baseball Hall of Fame and inducted into multiple Women's Sports Hall of Fame. Freddie Adu, a 14-year-old soccer prodigy from Ghana, became the youngest person ever to play for a Major League sports team when he took the field on April 3, 2004 for DC United against the San Jose Earthquakes. 2 weeks later, he became the youngest player to score a goal in Major League Soccer history. Despite his young start in comparison to soccer legend Pelé, Adu went on to have an unextraordinary journeyman career, playing on 15 different teams over the next couple of decades. Number 7. On the flip side, the legendary Hall of Fame pitcher Satchel Paige became the oldest person ever to appear in a Major League game when, at age 58, he took the mound for the Kansas City A's against the Boston Red Sox. The movie was a stunt by A's owner Charles O. Finley, and Finley even insisted that the nearly senior citizen Paige, who hadn't appeared in a Major League game for 12 years, sit in a rocking chair before the game with a nurse looking on. There's a picture of Mr. Paige sitting in a big rocking chair, big grin on his face, cup in his hand, and a pretty nurse standing beside him, smiling at him. But it was no stunt for the ever-competitive Paige, who, despite his advanced age, threw three shutout innings and even struck out a batter. Number 8. On March 2, 1962, I remember this one, basketball legend Wilt Chamberlain scored a staggering 100 points in one game for the Philadelphia Warriors against the New York Knicks. This is perhaps sports' most unbreakable record, with only Kobe Bryant coming anywhere close to matching it when, 44 years later in 2006, he scored a comparatively paltry 81 points. Chamberlain was an athlete unlike any in the world had seen up to that point. He was 7'1" tall, incredibly strong, and ran and jumped so well that he could have qualified for the Olympics. When he entered the NBA, the game was slow-moving by today's standards, with dunking almost non-existent and many players still preferring an antiquated two-handed set shot. Chamberlain revolutionized the game, often looking like an adult playing among children. In addition to his 100-point game in 1962, he averaged 40.4 points per game for the season. And there's a picture of him reaching up and laying the ball into the basket. Sadly, the game wasn't televised, so no footage exists of it. And because the game was played in a different arena than usual, the mainstream press outlets weren't there. It wasn't until the 1980s when the best documentation of this momentous occasion was unearthed. A recording of a radio broadcast's fourth quarter, a fan had taped using a reel-to-reel recorder. At a spring training game on March 24, 2001, the Diamondbacks Hall of Fame pitcher Randy Johnson hurled a 98 miles per hour fastball that hit and killed a bird that had the misfortune of flying into its path. The batter, San Francisco's giant outfield Calum Murphy, told The Athletic, "My initial reaction was the ball had exploded. I thought it was a practical joke or something that he threw some tricked-up exploding baseball. It just took a minute to process, and there's actually a video here, and all you can see is this poof of feathers. You never actually see the ball or the bird." The one in a trillion unlikeness of this happening wasn't lost on players. Johnson's team, Greg Swindle, takes 0.4 seconds for the ball to get to home plate out of Randy's hand because he reaches out so far. What are the odds of a bird flying by at the same time the ball was getting there? Amazingly, fellow Hall of Famer Dave Whitfield had a similar experience in 1983. The Yankee was warming up in the outfield at a game against the Toronto Blue Jays when he threw a ball and hit and killed a seagull. The incident greatly angered fans who, if you can't believe it. Winfield was arrested and charged with cruelty to animals by a police officer, Wayne Hartery, who believed it was an intentional act. Winfield vehemently denied the accusation, and charges were dropped the next day. Toronto fans taunted Winfield after that, flapping their arms like birds. And there's a big headline on a newspaper, "Slugger Charged in Seagull Slaying." And they actually have a picture here of the baseball that Winfield threw. And the poor one of the poor players putting a towel over the dead bird. The animosity didn't last forever, though. Winfield signed with the Blue Jays for the 1992 season and became a fan favorite, hitting .290 with 26 homers and 108 RBIs, finishing fifth in the American League's Most Valuable Player voting. Number 11. Lastly, Ed Hurd, a left-handed pitching phenom, was just 15 years old when tragedy struck. He was riding a bus with his arm around his girlfriend's shoulder when the bus collided with another oncoming bus, knocking him unconscious. When he came to, he saw his girlfriend was dead, and his left arm had been ripped off from its socket and was dangling by a thread. After a long surgery, doctors managed to avoid amputating his left arm, but told him he would never pitch again. Rather than give up, Head began the process of teaching himself to throw right-handed. And there's pictures of him throwing right-handed. It took Head 3 long years before he could throw the ball right-handed with any velocity, but he eventually became good enough to earn a spot at the low minor leagues. That would have been a story in and of itself, but Head continued to excel and earned a promotion to the Dodgers in 1940. Against all odds, Hez became a key member of the Dodgers' pitching staff, and in storybook fashion, even used his right arm to throw a no-hitter in 1946, blanking the Braves 5-0. How about that? Stay safe from scams. This is the cover story. Smart ways to foil fraudsters looking to steal your money, your identity, and your sense of security. I'm an avid movie streamer, so it's not unusual for me to receive emails from Netflix about new things to watch. So a new message about updating my account info didn't seem out of place, especially since the email contained the familiar red Netflix logo. Here's what the email said. We were unable to validate your billing information for the next billing cycle of your subscription. Therefore, we'll suspend your membership if we do not receive a response from you within 48 hours. Obviously, we'd love to have you back. Simply click Restart Your Membership to update your details and continue to enjoy all the best TV shows and movies without interruption. We're here to help you if you need it. Visit the Help Center for more info, the Netflix team. But on closer inspection, the tone seemed a bit off. Why so urgent? And I noticed a typo. 48 hours was typed wrong. So I promptly deleted the message without clicking any of the links, then blocked the sender and went about my day. I had been scammed, or rather someone had attempted to scam me. This is a common con, engineered to trick people into providing their credit card or debit card number, bank account details, and Netflix password. Through email, text messages, and social media requests, often with a questionable grammar and spelling, and old-fashioned phone calls, cyber criminals are doing everything in their power to deceive and defraud all around the world. People are falling victim to data breaches, viruses, and ransomware, when you're locked out of your computer unless you pay to regain access to your files. Cybercrime attacks often originate in China, Russia, India, and parts of Africa. Nigerian prince, anyone? That's because it can be difficult to find and charge perpetrators in those places. But the attacks can come from anywhere. Cybersecurity expert at Symantec, a security technology firm, says the United States experiences the most cybercrime of any country in the world. The FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center, IC3, tracked $27.6 billion in losses between 2018 and 2022. Older adults are particularly at risk. In 2021 alone, these scams cheated Americans older than 50 out of nearly $3 billion. This is a 62% increase from the prior year and almost half the total losses reported in 2021. According to the IC3's Elder Fraud Report, in fact, the true number of victims could be much higher, and because many seniors may not know how to report cyber fraud, or may not be aware that they have been scammed at all. Though seniors are often the victims, more members of Generation Z, born after 1996, are falling for the phone and online scams. The number of online scam victims, ages 20 and younger, in the United States increased 156% between 2017 and 2020, according to IC3 data. While the elderly are a known target group, they're also seeing fraudsters focusing on the younger generation. Children ages 14 through 18 who have just opened bank accounts and are tricked into giving out banking credentials on platforms like Snapchat, says Natalie Kelly, a chief risk officer at Visa. According to figures from the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, 44% of the people in their 20s have reported losing money to fraud. According to Cybercrime magazine, global cybercrime is expected to balloon to $10.5 trillion annually by 2025, more than three times the $3 billion stolen by scammers in 2015. Here's another way to put the magnitude of these monetary losses in perspective. If cybercrime were measured as a country, it would be the world's third largest economy after the United States and China, and ahead of Japan, Germany, the UK, India, France, Italy, and Canada. Many cybersecurity experts cite the pandemic as a catalyst for the increase in cybercrime. When much of the world was forced to work from home, often without the same security protocols they had at the office, it becomes more likely that the computer viruses would be let in, says Vishnu Fajaraj, a senior director at McAfee, a software security company. McAfee is one of the people they try to cheat you with, too. The number of ways that cybercriminals can take advantage of this have increased, too. As more and more were using devices to access apps and online accounts for things such as banking, shopping, and social media. Here's a scoop on the most widespread cybercrimes that can directly affect you and your loved ones. Phishing and smishing. Authentic-looking emails like the one I received from Netflix, and that's in parentheses, are often referred to as phishing, attempting to lure you into a phony website to input your information. Then these warnings come via text message. Experts refer to it as smishing, a short for SMS phishing. An email could have a logo that resembles that of your bank or your credit card company, with a message saying that someone is trying to access your account, and you need to log in immediately and change your password. But if you click the link, it will take you to a fake website, and your password and private financial information will go to the fraudsters. Now they have access to your money and can withdraw funds from your account or rack up charges on your credit card. And you might even be locked out because the criminals can now change your password. Cryptocurrency and other electronic forms of payment, including gift card codes or money orders, are popular among cybercriminals because they require no in-person interaction, are difficult to trace, and can be accessed around the world. In 2022, one cybercrime victim, who refers to remain anonymous, was swindled by a fraudster who sent an email that appeared to be from PayPal. The victim was duped into sharing financial details, which were then used to purchase more than $36,000 in Bitcoin. Remember this, no reputable company or government agency will ever email you to urgently confirm your identity by filling out forms. To protect yourself from phishing and smishing attacks, never click on links or attachments asking you to confirm your personal or payment information. When in doubt, contact the company or organization always by using the phone number or website located on your credit card or bank statement, or one that you look up yourself. And there's a picture here of a young lady surrounded by dangling fish hooks. Phishing, and that's V-I-S-H-I-N-G. Some fraudsters use those same tactics but over the phone. Don't trust anyone who phones to tell you they're from a bank, your internet service provider, or tech support department, even if you recognize the number. Phone numbers can easily be spoofed using computer programs that let scammers choose the number they want to pop up on your phone. Fraudsters may even claim they're with the Internal Revenue Service, using fake names and badge numbers, and may demand you pay fake tax bills or face arrest or other legal action. This voice phishing or vishing scam can be very convincing and threatening, says Teresa Payton, a cybersecurity expert who served as White House Chief of Communication Officer from 2006 to 2008. A popular phone call scam goes something like this. Hello, I'm calling from Microsoft. We've had a report from your internet service provider of virus problems with your computer. Can I help? The caller will tell you that the problem is serious and that you could be without internet access if the issue isn't resolved. If you agree, the caller will instruct you to allow remote access to your computer, enabling the fraudster to collect your data, either right then or where there or right then and there, or by installing hidden software that can relay information later. Phone-related scams cost Americans $39.5 billion between March 2021 and March 2022, according to the latest report from Truecaller, an app that identifies and blocks spam calls and text. This is the highest amount recorded since the annual report was first issued in 2015, in partnership with the Harris Poll. According to the study, 1 in 3 Americans report having fallen victim to a phone scam, and 1 in 5 were swindled on more than one occasion. There are certain things your bank or the government will never do, and that's the call, email, or text you and say you're going to be fined or arrested if you don't do this or do that. Special occasion scams. While fraud happens year-round, scammers often tie their appeals to something timely. In the beginning of this year, watch out for Valentine's Day scam with such enticements as, click here to join the best dating site for singles over 50. Gosh, I actually got that one the other day. Around tax season, you might receive a message saying, you're eligible for a refund. Got one of those, too. Other timely appeals might refer to war and natural disaster collections, such as phony charities seeking donations over social media to help people in Ukraine. Instead of helping the promised victims, these funds go straight into the thieves' pockets. Cyber criminals take advantage of people in times of economic uncertainty, too. Last year, Facebook users may have seen posts from a group called Southwest Air Fans claiming to give away a pair of airline tickets if they clicked on a link to enter a sweepstakes. The perpetrators stole the personal information of people who entered, which led to identity theft. We're seeing a lot more fraudsters focusing on the cost of living scams, such as fake giveaways, discounts, and energy tax rebates, says Kelly. Ransom emails. Bob Lotich, a Franklin, Tennessee educator and personal finance expert, got an email saying his passwords would be held for ransom if he didn't pay up. The password that I had used on hundreds of sites was sitting there right in the subject line, Lotich wrote on his blog, Seed Time. The email explained that they not only had my password, but it hacked into my webcam. The criminal said that if he didn't send $2,900 in Bitcoin in the next 24 hours, they would attack his accounts. The password was an old one, so Lotich checked out all his current accounts to ensure that it all had two-factor authentication and different passwords. They did, so he didn't respond to the email or pay up, and the threat turned out to be an empty one. Grandparent scams. This is pretty popular. Scammers love to target old people because they pay so well. Disturbing data published by the cybersecurity company Comparatech shows that while the average loss per incident from those in their 20s was $324, that figure jumped to 426 for victims in their 60s, 635 for those in their 70s, and 1,300 for those in their 80s. Many sinners are hit by fraudsters who send a text message or direct message over social media while posing as a grandchild asking for money to help with a medical emergency or travel problems or to buy textbooks. The scammers glean personal details from Facebook or Instagram photos, allowing them to craft a believable message. The caller's phone number looks familiar, so people are more likely to answer. In fact, sometimes scammers will try to sound like the person they're impersonating, using videos from social media as a source. Or they'll explain that their voice is a little different, they're upset, or have a bad connection. Advanced fraudsters may even employ convincing deep fake technology to make their voice sound just like a relative's. The grandchild may plead with grandparents to not tell anyone because they're embarrassed or scared, wanting to help the victims and send money via wire transfer to the scammer. In March 2022, an 81-year-old man in Ontario fell for a grandparent scam. The grandchild said he had been pulled over by police and needed money for the fine. The grandfather paid, then came a second call, supposedly from a Royal Canadian Mounted police officer, who validated the grandson's story and said more money was needed. The grandfather made 4 payments over 3 months and lost more than $70,000. If you get a message like this from a loved one, call your relatives directly and ask if they really are in trouble, and warn any seniors you know. Romance and catfishing scams. Catfishing is when someone pretends to be someone they're not. Fraudsters use phony name and photo to court someone online, usually over social media or on a dating app, with the goal of making the victim fall in love with them so they can ask for money. Rebecca D'Antonio of Orlando, Florida, says she was cheated out of more than $100,000 by a man she met on a dating site. Matthew said he was a widower and a single dad. The pair emailed and texted for months. D'Antonio thought they were going to get to know each other. She was sympathetic when Matthew said his credit card stopped working during a trip abroad, and when he said he needed help paying some medical bills. She had hidden money via wire transfers over the course of a year, until on the verge of bankruptcy, she finally confronted him and he disappeared. Reducing your risk. All this might make you want to unplug and go back to the pre-digital age. Fortunately, credit card issuers and other companies, as well as government agencies, are on the case. Worldwide, Visa has invested $9 billion in fraud prevention and cybersecurity over the past 5 years, including $500 million for artificial intelligence, machine learning, and data infrastructure. This helped Visa monitor for suspicious activity on your account in real time. Utilizing more than 500 risk attributes, clues, that may indicate fraud. In doing so, it's expert in identifying patterns of fraud and cybercrime and work with law enforcement to find these bad actors and bring them to justice. Visa regularly works alongside the U.S. Department of Justice, FBI, Secret Service, and Europol to help identify and apprehend fraudsters and other criminals around the world. During the first half of 2021, Visa and these agencies brought down the notorious Fin7 cybercrime gang, perpetrators of an international ATM cash-out enterprise, when people's bank cards are cloned and their money is taken out of ATMs, and recovered millions of dollars laundered by an organized crime ring. MasterCard has invested more than $1 billion in cybersecurity since 2018. In the past 3 years, the company has prevented $30 billion in potential losses. In 2020, MasterCard established the Global MasterCard Intelligence and Cyber Center of Excellence at its tech hub in Vancouver, British Columbia, to accelerate innovation in the security field. At the same time, you can take these steps to protect yourself. Use strong passwords. Passwords should be at least 7 characters long in combination of letters, upper and lower case, numbers, and symbols. Don't use your birth year or anything obvious, such as the names of your kids or pets. A passphrase is a good idea, using symbols to replace letters in a phrase you will likely remember. For example, my, and it shows the my ampersand T, capital C, IS, pound sign, 1. My cat Charlie is number 1, or what that would mean. Never use the same password for all your online activity, because if a site or app is breached, then the crooks will know that password, same password, to try to hack into your other accounts. Password manager apps such as iPassword, and, iPassword, and Dashlane are a good way to store your various passwords. Keep your social circle small. Get your social media profiles to private. If someone asks to connect with you, accept the request only if you know the person. Ideally, even if the request comes with a name and photo of someone you know, confirm it's really that person by reaching out to them in another way. If it's a fake, block the user and report the fraudulent usage. Double your efforts. For online banking and shopping apps, a two-factor authentication, which requires not only your password to log in, but also a one-time code word sent to your mobile device to prove it's really you. Hide yourself. Whenever you go online, you use Use your browser's private or incognito mode so your history and cookies are deleted after your association. Better yet, consider using virtual private network, VPN, software, to remain anonymous when you're online. The expert at CNET chose ExpressVPN as their top pick. Rethink your email accounts. If you use an email account to log into social media, ideally use an account you created just for that purpose. Not one tied to your bank account, health information, or personal communications. This is because these politically accessible email accounts can be easily harvested, says Peyton. Instead, she suggests look for an encrypted email platform such as Proton Mail. Shop safely. Don't shop or bank online using a public Wi-Fi or hotspot, such as in the cafe, airport, or hotel lobby, as they're not as secure as your home Wi-Fi or for a regular cellular connection. Instead, make your phone a personal hotspot. Better yet, use a secure internet connection such as your home Wi-Fi. Reputable websites use technologies that encrypt data to you during transmission. And to confirm this level of security, look for a padlock icon and HTTPS in front of the URL. Shop only on sites that make secure payments, such as Methods. I'm sorry, it's a weird print here. It looks like the thing kind of ran a little bit when they were printing it. In front of the shop only on sites that take some secure payment methods, such as credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, or Google Pay. When shopping at an unfamiliar site, look for a security seal of approval, such as DigiCert, Better Business Bureau, or VeriSign. Many security experts say it's safer to shop using the store's app than its website. Then when shopping on sites such as eBay or Facebook Marketplace, also check the seller's reputation and read the comments about buying before buying anything. Protect your tech. To prevent viruses or other malware, install anti-malware software on your devices. It's like placing a deadbolt on your front door and activating an alarm system. Fortinet, formerly referred to as antivirus software and anti-malware protection from Avast, Norton, and others, can identify, quarantine, delete, and report suspicious activity. The best products include a firewall, encryption options, and webcam detections to protect you from someone to try remotely access your camera. Finally, trust your instincts. The name Spidey Sense that helps you stay safe in the real world can help you steer clear of Sam's in the cyber world, too. Bon appetit. In any household, the true master of hope is the family dog. Dogs regard any delicious smell emanating from the kitchen as a meal they can be reasonably expected to share. An elderly dog may have been fed only kibble in all the years of long life, but he will nevertheless haul his already self into the kitchen, confident that this time the lasagna sitting on the counter will be his. As we've reached the time now where everybody seems to be pushing electric vehicles, let's take a look at, will an electric car save you money, from Consumer Reports. We calculated energy costs, tax credits, and hidden discounts and have the answer. Electric vehicles, EVs, have a lot going for them. They create fewer greenhouse gas emissions than gas-powered vehicles, and their quick and silent acceleration means they're fun to drive, too. So it's no wonder that EV sales are growing. 5.3% of U.S. new car sales in 2022, up from 3% in 2021, according to the automotive research firm Ward's Intelligent, while sales of conventional gasoline vehicles declined. But sticker prices remain an issue. Most new EVs are luxury models with an average sale price of over $60,000, about $12,000 more than an industry average. EV buyers also need to calculate how much an electric car will cost to drive, including tax breaks and electricity rates. And those can vary depending on where you live, the vehicle you choose, whether you buy or lease, and even your annual income. Figuring how much an EV will cost can be complex, but it's worth doing for the math before making such a major purchase, says Jake Fisher, Senior Director of Auto Testing at Consumer Reports. An EV may make financial sense for many buyers, but some might be better off with a fuel-efficient hybrid. To help you with better understand the costs and savings of an EV, CR will walk you through how to shop for one while saving money at each step. Number one, factor in reliability. Why it matters. Feedback from CR members who own EVs suggests that reliability is an especially important concern when going electric. And I'm going to make it a little aside here. I saw in the news today there have been 17 deaths and 786 crashes using Tesla's automatic driving thing. It's especially important concern when going electric, in theory, because EVs lack engines, complex transmissions, and fuel or exhaust systems. They should cost less to service than gas-powered vehicles. On the average, that's true. A 2020 CR study found that EVs cut repair maintenance costs by 50% over similar gas cars. You could save hundreds of dollars a year, but the actual savings would depend on your car. How to save? EVs are based on new technology, and some automakers are just making their first forays into the EV market, Fisher says. The companies might not have had the time to work out all of the production and design issues. As a result, new EVs might have more problems early on. For instance, some EVs from Audi, Chevrolet, and Hyundai had battery issues in the first years of manufacture. Where those have all since been resolved, it took time to work the kinks out. To compensate, EVs offer generous warranties on parts like batteries and electric drivetrains, usually around 8 years or 100,000 miles. To reduce the chances of problems, Fisher suggests starting with CR's list of recommended EVs, and as is our advice for gas-powered cars, stick to the ones that have been on the market for at least 2 years. Tesla and Nissan have been mass-producing electric cars for over a decade, and the Model 3 and Leaf have very few problems with batteries, electric motors, or charging, he says. Remember, complicated bells and whistles can cause trouble on both gas and electric cars. For example, problems with the Tesla's Model X fussy in-car electronics are partly why this pricey EV, $109,000 to $120,000, has below-average predicted reliability. Number two, calculate your fuel savings. Why it matters. The cost of electricity to charge an EV is almost always hundreds of dollars less per year than the fuel expense for a similar gas-powered vehicle. But exactly how much can you vary widely depending on the electricity rates and gas prices where you live? For example, electricity can cost twice as much as a per kilowatt hour in Connecticut as it does in Oregon. Figuring out an EV's energy cost is a lot more complex than doing the same for a gas-powered car. But the Department of Energy's Alternative Fuels Data has an easy-to-use calculator at afdc.energy.gov/calc and helps to keep a few general principles in mind. For example, if you live somewhere with high gas prices and low electricity costs, such as the West Coast, an EV will almost always be less expensive to run than a conventional car or a hybrid. But in New England, where gas prices are lower and electricity prices are generally higher than out west, those savings may be negligible and tilt the balance in favor of a gas-electric hybrid with less expensive purchase price. Depending on local gas and electricity costs, hybrids might be better financially sensed than EVs for some buyers, especially because many love having outstanding long-term reliability, Fisher says. Before deciding whether to buy an EV, see if your utility company offers discounted off-peak charging or free charging is available at work or in your neighborhood. Some automakers, including Hyundai, Kia, Toyota, and Volkswagen, offer free access to certain high-speed public chargers for just a few years after a vehicle purchase. And there's an aside here. It says, a CR-recommended EV list for likely to be more reliable than other models are the BMW i4, the Genesis GV60, Hyundai Ioniq 5, Kia EV6, the Nissan Leaf, and the Tesla Model 3. Local electric and gas costs affect possible EV savings. In the showing a map here, the lower balance favors EVs, the closer to red, the more favors gas. And it's pretty obvious Hawaii is much favoring gas because they have their own source there. And the Northeast is very much towards gas. The rest of the country, except for the West Coast, is pretty much neutral. Now, California is an exception to that. California is kind of a no-no or almost no difference. State tax breaks can add significant savings on top of federal incentives, and some utilities offer discounted rates to people who charge EVs at home at certain times. Savings on home chargers are also available. If an EV doesn't qualify for incentives, you might save by leasing instead of buying. Check for tax credits. Why it matters. The Inflation Reduction Act, IRA, signed and allowed last year, allows some tax credits available to EV buyers but reduces or eliminates others. How to save. Credits up to $7,500 depend on where the vehicle is made, its price, and the buyer's income. Now, used EVs can also get a tax credit of up to $4,000. Price. To qualify, a new EV must have an MSRP of under $55,000 for sedans and wagons and $80,000 for SUVs, vans, and trucks, regardless of dealer discounts. We are also seeing some automakers, such as Tesla, slash prices so their EVs can qualify for the IRA incentives, says Quinota Warren, CR's Associate Director of Sustainability. Where assembled? New vehicles assembled outside of North America, including the 2023 Hyundai Ioniq 5 and Kia EV6, aren't eligible for a tax credit. And buyers might get less than a full $7,500 tax credit, depending on where an EV's batteries and electrical components are made. A car's window sticker shows where it was made. Income. New car buyers must have an annual adjusted gross income below $150,000 for single tax filers and $300,000 for married couples filing jointly. Ugh. Undercover hidden savings. Don't leave money on the table. Go to rcr.org/EV savings to see how much you could save with state and local incentives. And they list three cities here. Orlando, Florida, there is no state credit rebate. There is a $200 utility credit, and there's no charge or credit. So you would save basically $200. Pasadena, California, there's a $2,000 state credit, a utility company $500 credit, and a charger credit of $600. In Middleborough, Massachusetts, there's a $3,500 straight credit or rebate, no utility company credit, and $300 charger credit. So you should look for rebates, why it matters. In addition to federal tax credits, EV buyers can potentially save thousands thanks to state tax breaks for car buyers, lower electric rates for EV owners to charge at home at certain times, or discounts on installing an at-home charger. As of July 2021, such incentives exist in 47 states and the District of Columbia, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. How to save. CR's Electric Vehicle Savings Finder, that's cr.org/EV savings, details what may be available to you based on where you live. For example, residents of Pasadena, California might qualify for a $500 rebate from their utility company if they buy or lease their car from a local dealership, plus a $600 rebate and discount electric rates depending on which charger they buy and where they plug and when they plug in. EV owners in Orlando, Florida can get $200 back from their power provider, and Massachusetts offers a generous $3,500 state tax credit on some EVs. A recent survey showed that nearly half of all Americans aren't aware of the incentives available to them, says Chris Hardo, CR Senior Policy Analyst for Transportation and Energy. Even if you live in a state you wouldn't think would have incentives, you may be surprised by what's available. Consider leasing. Dealers or leasing companies can get a $7,500 commercial incentive for each EV they lease, even if it doesn't qualify for an incentive if sold to an individual. That means those lease vehicles aren't subject to the most restrictions that apply to EV purchases. How to save. If you make too much to qualify for a tax credit, the car you want might be too expensive or the vehicle isn't made in North America, consider leasing instead of buying. The dealership can pass the savings on to you by lowering the negotiated vehicle prices the lease is based on. If you're leasing a car, make sure to ask for the itemized bill of sale that shows where the tax credit has been applied, says Gabe Schenhauer, Associate Director of CR's Auto Test Center, and make that sure the dealership hasn't raised the price to cover the difference. And if you've ever been involved in the purchase of a new car, you know the dealership always tries to add little extras. So just say no to these dealership extras. You may think the hard work is done once you've negotiated a good price on a new car. But before you can leave, you have to sign paperwork in the dealership's finance and insurance office. And that's where things can get tricky. In addition to discussing payment terms, the F&I rep may push various add-ons, such as rust protection and tire warranties. Those extras can add a whole lot to the price of a car. According to Alan Nanasimkin, Senior Vice President of Business Development of TrueCar, a company that tracks the auto industry as a CR partner, profit margins for dealerships are probably slimmer than you think. F&I is where they make the real money. Some salespeople may tell you that you have to pay for paint protection or some other extra that has already been added to the car. But, says Gabe Schenhauer, Associate Director at Consumer Reports Auto Test Center, if you don't ask for an add-on, you don't have to pay for it, even if the car already has it. VIN etching. What it is. Engraving the car's VIN or vehicle identification number into the windows to deter vehicle theft and assessed in vehicle recovery, if stolen. Dealers may even say they are required by law to offer it. That may be true, but you are not required to take it or to pay for it. How much it costs? Between $200 and $300 based on CR's experts' experience. Some dealers will sell the car pre-etched and attempt to later upsell this unnecessary service. Why you should say no. It's unnecessary. All new cars have VIN stamped in multiple places, including under the hood and inside the door jams. And if you want to do it, you can probably get it done cheaper somewhere else. Rust proofing and more. What they are. Protecting coatings that are sold as a way to maintain paint luster and prevent underbody rust. Interior sprays are meant to improve stain resistance. How much they cost? Around $600 for paint protection and $800 for rust-proofing based on the experience of CR's car shoppers, although pricing may vary widely among dealers. Why you should say no. The frame, exterior paint, and interior fabrics in today's new cars are designed to last a decade or longer, so extra protection isn't necessary. Periodic cleaning is all the car needs to look good for years. Extended warranty coverage. What it is. This insurance covers defects that could arise after the car is no longer covered by the factory warranty. How much it costs? Prices vary widely, but on the high end, they can easily add $2,000 or more to the total price of your car. And if you finance that charge, it will cost even more because of the interest you'll pay. Why should we say no? Most new cars already come with factory back protection, which usually lasts several years and tens of thousands of miles. Powertrain warranties typically last longer and cover the vehicle's most expensive parts. Wheel and tire warranty. What it is. Specific coverage for wheel and tire damage due to driving over curbs, potholes, and other road hazards. How much it costs? Pricing varies. Chad Fritschke, a Chevrolet salesperson in Kentucky, says his dealership charges about $700 for the coverage. Why you should say no? Most cars don't have the expensive low-profile tires that are more damage-prone. If you're buying an 80,000 Corvette, it might be worth getting this coverage because those wheels are pricey, Fritschke says. Check to see what your insurance covers. Nitrogen-filled tires. What they are. The pitch is that nitrogen-filled tires are less susceptible to the pressure changes that come with fluctuation in temperature than tires filled with regular air. Some dealers will pre-fill tires with nitrogen. Affixing green tire stem caps is proof that it has been done. How much it cost? Schenner says he has decades had dealers try to tack on to $400 for this. But I will say from personal experience, a lot of them will do it for nothing. Why should say no? Air is mostly nitrogen anyway, says Ryan Pizlowski, manager of CR's tire program. Says all tires lose pressure over time, regardless of what's inside them. But a matter of fact is nitrogen does not suffer quite the same difference of temperature fluctuation. That's me. Pinstriping and other embellishments. What they are, add-ins like mud flaps, door edge guards, and decorative stripes along the side of the car that may be offered to personalize the vehicle and increase the dealer profit. How much they cost? Dealer added items can pad the price by hundreds of dollars or more before factoring financing into the cost. Why should you say no? Unless you specifically ask for something, you should refuse to pay for it. The car should be ready to go when it arrives in the factory. Just be sure floor mats, the window sticker, two sets of keys, and the owner's manual are included. Which type of kitchen countertop is the most resistant to staining? According to our lab test, the most stain-resistant countertop is quartz, a man-made material composed mainly of a mixture of ground quartz and resins. Granite, a natural stone, is a close second when it comes to stain resistance. While neither of these surfaces is completely impervious to discoloration, both showed a strong resistance to staining from common foods and household products such as beet juice, food coloring, and chemical drain cleaners. One big difference. Granite requires upkeep to maintain its stain resistance. You need to reseal it periodically, something you won't have to do with quartz. In general, you should reapply sealant when drops of water no longer bead up on the granite. Quartz also tends to be slightly less expensive than granite, although a few premium brands of quartz are about the same price or even more. Another countertop material that's similarly priced and excellent at standing up to tough stains is a varnish-sealed butcher block. The downside, it falls near the bottom of our countertop material ratings because it shows wear and tear easily. Other popular countertop choices include marble, limestone, and bamboo, all of which were in low scores in our stain-resistant testing. My in-ear headphone buds are always falling out. How can I get a better fit? Start by looking for a pair that comes with multiple sizes of soft silicone or foam ear tips. For example, Apple's basic wireless AirPods at $130 are sold with one-size-fit-all earbuds, but the Pro version, $250, comes with silicone tips in four sizes, including a new extra-small tip. To help you achieve a better fit, you can also look for models that have wingtips, little silicone arms that fit in the exterior of your ear for added stability. Beats by Dre Beats Fits Pro, $250, is a top-scoring example of these. Next, to find the earbuds best suited for your ears, try them on. Start with the medium-sized tips and work your way up and down, making sure the tips are securely attached. They should be pushed all the way into the earbud stems to prevent the tip from popping out or getting stuck in your ear canal. You're looking for a snug fit without too much pressure. Some headphone brands, such as Apple and Sony, have smartphone apps that can test the seal for you and can suggest whether you need to go up or down a size. If you can get a good deal with more than one size, it's best to go larger. Smaller ones can go too deep in the ear canal and be harder to remove if they get stuck. And FYI, if your left and right ears may require different sizes. In our labs, We assess how well headphones stay in place in spite of vigorous head movement, and more noteworthy, whether they pinch, cramp the ears, or get hot or sticky after prolonged use. To browse CR's reviews of over 190 headphone models, go to cr.org/headphones. My Carter battery is just 2 years old, but it died. Even though it's summer, what gives? Hot weather is actually harder on your battery than cold. That's because heat can cause the battery to corrode and or the battery's liquid to evaporate, damaging its power-generating chemistry inside. The stats from AAA bear this out. Car batteries typically last about 58 months or longer in the most northern parts of the U.S., such as North Dakota, where it's regularly 0 degrees Fahrenheit in winter and tend to last less than 41 months in southeastern regions, mostly like Arizona, where temps can rise above 100 degrees Fahrenheit regularly in the summer. Sears' John Calatafore, who manages our car battery test, recommends having your car battery load tested annually, and it's after 2 years old if you live in a warmer climate or 4 years old if you live in a colder climate. Doing so tests your battery's ability to hold a charge while being used and indicates when it's time for a new battery. If you live where temperatures regularly exceed 80 degrees Fahrenheit, look for batteries in our ratings that extend the length of life, such as those on page 9 of this issue, which we haven't seen yet. How about sleeping cooler this summer? Even with the air conditioning on, it can be hard to stay comfortably cool while you sleep. The good news, the right mattress, sheets, pillows, and more can help you stop waking up in a sweat. Consider these solutions, handpicked by our sleep product experts, for staying cool all night. A pillow that won't trap heat. The Tuft & Needle Original Foam for $100. This polyurethane foam pillow aces our test for breathability, a measure of how effectively a pillow dissipates moisture. This pillow didn't trap heat, which sets it apart from other top-rated pillows in our tests. Truly breathable sheets. L.L. Bean, Pima Coppet and Percal, 280 thread count, $170. Sleek Experts are sheets made of natural fibers like 100% cotton, are a good choice because they promote better airflow. This is said is soft but still resists tears and seam damage in our test. Special cooling pad. Chili Sleep Cued System, $550. Made to go under your fitted sheet, a cooling pad can chill your bed to desired temperature. This one, controlled by remote, can go as low as 55 degrees Fahrenheit. It offers a 30-night trial and one-year warranty. Comfortable mattress, Parachute Eco Comfort for $2,400. This innerspring disperses body heat well in our lab test. We simulate 98 degrees Fahrenheit sleeper and measure how much heat the mattress traps over 8 hours. It's also great at supporting bath, back, and side sleepers. And a refreshing eye mask, the Manta Cool Mask for $45. The Manta Mask has removable eye cups that can be popped in the freezer. While we didn't test cooling the mask, we found it to be comfortable. Manta allows free returns up to 60 days. Where to save big on small appliances? Love a good bargain? A recent survey of more than 20,000 CR members gave us the lowdown on shopping for small appliances such as air fryers, toaster ovens, blenders, and more at major retailers, revealing which ones rated best for great prices, selection, and customer service, among other factors. Five retailers shown in our ratings chart below were called out for their budget-friendly prices. The big surprise, the top rating for low prices, selection of products, customer service, and delivery went to QVC, the website of the TV-based shopping channel. QVC received praise not just for its prices, but also for its wide array of small appliances. Talk about that. And its easy-to-navigate website. I got a great deal on the Keurig coffee maker I wanted, explained Sharon, a survey participant from Georgia. It's easy to order online, said Dorothea from Missouri. Don from Ohio listed price, ease, great customer service, speed of delivery as QVC's merits. Membership warehouses such as Costco and Sam Clubs also got favorable scores for their low prices, but they didn't fare as well for the selection of small appliances. Finally, Lowe's and Home Depot scored poorly, both on their prices and the selection. In fact, they were the only two retailers in our survey to receive unfavorable scores overall. Big box store bargains. Asking for a better price works, even at large retailers. In fact, CR members in our 2022 survey who haggled when shopping for a small appliance got a better deal 78% of the time, saving about $57 each. How to negotiate? Here's what successful bargainers told us. Always ask a representative in-store online whether they can offer you a discount. Among those who successfully bargained at retail stores, 26% simply asked for a lower price. You should also inquire about special discounts you may be eligible for, such as those for seniors, veterans, or teachers. And check with any organization you belong to, such as AAA, for member discounts. If you find the same item at less for another retailer, use it as a bargaining chip. If you're in the store, search for competitors' websites for the same product on your smartphone, then ask a salesperson about price matching. While shopping online, use a retailer's chat function, where it's easy to share links you found, proving that the same item is being offered for a lower price on another retailer site. And the ratings were QVC got 74 for overall satisfaction, 4 out of 5 for price, 4 out of 5 for selection. Macy's got 65 overall satisfaction, 4 out of 5 for price praise, and 4 out of 5 for selection. Costco got a 64 rating, 4 out of 5 price pave, 1 out of 5 selection. Kohl's got a 63, 4 out of 5 for parade, and not that good of a 3 out of 5 selection. Sam's Club only got a 51 for overall satisfaction, 4 out of 5 for the price, but 1 out of 5 for selection. And Lowe's overall satisfaction was 2 out of 5 for the price paid, 2 out of 5 for selection. And Home Depot, 2 out of 5 for the price paid, and 2 out of 5 for selection. Here's an interesting statistic. A tall latte from Starbucks costs $3.45 in the chain's native state of Washington, but it's as high as $3.92 in Hawaii, and only $2.89 in Mississippi. The same cup of Joe is just $1.31 in Turkey and $1.96 in Brazil, but it'll set you back as much as $5.36 in France, $6.65 in Denmark, and a whopping $7.17 in Switzerland. How about a couple of other jokes? When asked by the New York Times Book Review which writer he invited to dinner party, John Cleese answered Mark Twain, because he said Wagner's music is much better than it sounds, which I think is the greatest joke ever made. Two mafia hitmen are walking in the woods at night. One turns to the other and says, "It's really dark in here. I'm scared." "You're scared," says the other mobster. "I'm supposed to walk out of here alone." And a couple more. Kids Bop. My four-year-old is singing a song she made up. The only words, "Everything's a mess and I don't care," is the song of our times. My five-year-old is singing a song she made up called "I Love It When You Cry After My Heart." So good luck with all her favorite suitors, all her future suitors. And with that, we have just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.